Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is the Yanks Go Yard podcast with Adam Weinrib and Thomas Carinante.
Oh, welcome on into the Yanks Go Yard podcast. I'm Adam Weinrib alongside Thomas Carinante. We're excited to do a podcast today. The Yankees face the Houston Astros in their series finale, 5:05 p.m. Eastern time today. But Thomas, is winning 2 out of 3 in this scenario enough to dance on graves? Because it kind of feels like it. That's now 6-0 against Houston on the year. That's 9-0. In their last 9 against Houston, and well, none of those were in the playoff games, Yankee wieners. So you're gonna need to actually prove us. Okay, well, let's see you get there. I'm gonna operate on the assumption, until proven otherwise, that Houston will get back to the postseason despite being 12-25 on the year, or whatever they are, 12-25, 12-24. Where are the Houston Astros right now? I think it's 24. I don't want to misstate there. 12-24. So 12-24 on the year, 12-18 without the presence of the New York Yankees. You're welcome. It's a much more reasonable hole if the Yankees had not beaten you again 6 times. And this series starts off, okay, Luis Gil in the opener against Justin Verlander. You know, I'm interested, but we never beat Verlander. Rodon against a rookie in the second one, but Rodon coming off a blow-up start against the Orioles. Okay, I mean, like, you could talk me into losses in either of those games or both of those games. I definitely did not think the Yankees were going to take the first two. And I definitely didn't think the Yankees were going to take the first two by the scores of 10-3 and 9-4. And at the end of those games, I'd be able to say, you know what? They weren't actually that close. 10-1 with 2 outs in the ninth and 8-1 in the seventh. And then some late inning bullpen chicanery and Ian Hamilton try to work through stuff. That game ends a little bit closer than it should have. But 10-3 and 9-4 blowout final scores that also are not even representative of the dominance of the Yankees in these two games. I sure hope the Yankees sweep this series tonight, this evening. That'd be great. But I am ready to declare this a win, and not just because it was a series win. And obviously, I'm awaiting postseason. I know what postseason play means. This is not to say, hey, none of that other stuff ever happened. You know, the 2017 to 2023 Yankees, forget about it. You know, Houston doesn't deserve, we have the advantage. Forget that stuff. Forget when Houston beat us a million times. No, of course not. But I'm looking into very strongly, doing some research, trying to determine if this is a new era. And Thomas Carinante, welcome to the show. It kind of feels like it.
It kind of feels like it. Before we get into that, before I gloat for the first time in a while, DraftKings is here, everybody. Welcome. Thanks for tuning in. DraftKings is offering a fantastic sign-up bonus for new users. New customers can place a $5 first bet on any sport and then instantly claim $150 in bonus bets. Only, though, if you sign up with our code YanksGoYard, you will also receive one single-game parlay reward every day. Pretty good deal. The best part is that you will get both of these rewards regardless of what happens. Even if that first bet loses, you're getting all the bonuses. Please, use that code YanksGoYard because not only does it get you all these perks, but it also directly supports us, your friends, Adam and Thomas, YanksGoYard.com, the YanksGoYard podcast. It's what you're here for during the baseball season. Why not give it the extra juice? If you've been considering signing up for DraftKings, please make sure to use our code YanksGoYard to maximize those first bets. This offer is only available to new customers who are 21 and older and physically present in legal gambling states. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. Check the episode description for full terms of the offer to see if you qualify. This is a win. It is a win. It's 6-0 against the Astros this season. Season series already done with. I don't care because for all the years that we have either fell behind the Astros early on in the season by losing a series, for all the years where we won a series and then blew the last game and had the, you know, the good taste punched right out of our mouths, I'm taking the victory lap here. And I've been fairly negative. I was not happy on Monday's podcast after the sweep over the Tigers. And I know that some people would be critical of that because the Tigers have a really good pitching staff, but
solid team.
Yeah, solid team. But I mean, this Yankees team is on another level. It's supposed to be upper echelon. It has the talent that we need to be a World Series contender. And you didn't see the consistency as much as you would like to in the early going, but guess what? They swept the Astros 4-0 to kick off this season. Now they're burying them and could put the final nail in their coffin. I understand the series isn't over. I mean, the season isn't over for the Astros, but it's hard to dig yourself out of this hole. And you look at the AL West, Mariners, pretty fucking good. Rangers doing much better than the Astros, despite having, what, 100 people on the injured list. Yeah. They're 6 games over .500, and they shouldn't even be. They shouldn't even have a seat at the table right now. The Oakland A's are better than anybody expected. I think the only non-factor is the Angels in that division. But the Astros have to play. Obviously, that's the majority of their schedule moving forward. And none of those teams, except for the Angels, again, when maybe I don't know what their schedule looks like, but maybe they face the Astros when Mike Trout comes back. All those teams are in it to compete. And the Mariners and Rangers are, in my book, World Series contenders right now. This is not getting easy for the Astros. And if the Yankee, if they sweep this series, who do the Astros have after us?
That's a really good question. I mean, because I've been doing
the Tigers.
All right.
They're at Detroit.
All right.
So Tigers, again, not the most impressive, but the pitching's been really good. The Astros are... the offense is there, but their pitching staff is putting them into a hole. If the Tigers can jump on this first inning woes that the Astros are having at the moment, they are giving up runs in the first inning at an alarming clip, which is putting the offense in a bad position. We could be looking at the end of the Astros season in the second week of May. I know you're not going to say that because you don't even want to put that bad juju out.
I refuse.
You look at it. The Astros are not getting much better from this point. Their offense is completely healthy for the most part. Sure. Everybody you need is there. Yes, they're getting back some pitchers, but how effective is Luis Garcia or Lance McCullers Jr. going to be after missing half the season?
Well, Spencer Arrighetti yesterday, Astros looked at the Orioles' success in creating clone after clone. And they're like, can we do a Lance McCullers clone? Like, can we just, without McCullers, can we just throw a long hair guy with a scruff out there and he'll be okay? And I looked up some pictures of Arrighetti, and maybe they even posted one on the broadcast. And he just looked like a completely different dude at spring training like 2 years ago. Clean shaven, short cut, but like it truly seemed intentional. And they were like, his heroes are, you know, Verlander was his hero growing up. And I was like, are you sure it wasn't McCullers? Because I'm looking at him. And it truly seems like they're like, we got McCullers at home. What's the McCullers at home look like? I don't know. This guy's throwing meatballs to Juan Soto. Yeah, I had a lot of fun with that. They theoretically, Blanco and Verlander are their two best pitchers running away right now. Arrighetti, who knows what you're getting on a daily basis. The stuff supposedly there. And the first two guys, absolute flops. So it does not feel like the Astros pitching is in a good spot right now.
No. And the bullpen is it the worst in the league? I think there's only maybe one team worse than them at this point. Abreu, Presley, Hader, not getting the job done. I know they haven't had any exposure to this Yankees series yet, but that's gonna take a lot of rebounding. Look at the Yankees. The Yankees were 10 games over .500, I think, at the beginning of May last year.
That was the only tough moment of the series so far. I was going to talk about it later in the moment you almost pooped your pants. After the end of game, after the end of game one, there was a jump scare. The Yankees went to 11 over. And Michael Kay was like, they haven't been this far over .500 since. And I was like, early 2022. And he was like, spring 2023. I was like, oh, shit, we were 11 over last year at some point. God damn.
Yeah.
So apparently we did that last year. But yes, it's been a while. So that red series at the end of May last year, we were pretty far over .500.
Yeah. Either way, it was like that. And you didn't have the greatest feeling with that team because you knew that there were some things wrong with them. The Astros have a lot of things wrong with them and they're losing games. So, you know, there's already been chat. Dana Brown was already asked on the radio, MLB Network radio, if the Astros would consider selling at the trade deadline. That's not a good sign, you know, for analysts to be legitimately asking that question. So that's where I'll end it because I don't want to gloat too much. But this is exact. Nonetheless, the first two games of the series is exactly what I've been looking for from the Yankees from a perseverance perspective, right? I know we did have that in the beginning of the year, especially against Houston, because they notched all those comeback wins. But getting punched in the mouth in the first inning with those home runs, the Yankees usually take a little bit of time to come back from that. The offense is quiet early on. Each of these times, Kyle Tucker homers in the first inning against the starting pitchers. The starting pitchers rebound immediately and regroup. The offense backs them up immediately and capitalizes on the opposing pitching, getting aggressive in the counts, turning on pitches that they like, picking up on tells. I don't know. You know, there was a lot of smart at bats in this series so far, in my opinion. But the way that they persevered in that respect, and then the way that the starters were able to last late into the games, Carlos Rodon, Luis Gil, both pitching into the seventh inning. Absolutely. Hell yes.
Yeah. How about Juan Soto, like jumping on that Arrighetti fastball, just not even thinking of, like, you're going to go outer half with, you know, 96 center cut. Okay, great. I'm going to hit this 440 feet to left center. Completely different than Soto's normal approach of like waiting out a pitcher. Maybe we shuffle on an inside pitch. Maybe we try to pick up when he's putting down. And Arrighetti uncorked some good changeups to him later. And he was like, all right, I see, swung over one, took one. He's like, all right, I see. But he was hoping for a fastball. He got one. He did not miss. He ambushed it. And that's why it was funny that they were sort of they're benefiting a little bit from hit strikes hard at this point. They have been ambushing fastballs. They have been hitting strikes hard. They just don't have some guy moronically telling them to do it all the time. Like, it's actually easier to do that when you don't have somebody being like, hey, remember,
wait a second. Didn't we know we were supposed to do that?
Got to hit those strikes.
No, but listen, you actually have to do it. And they're like, I don't understand.
I mean, look, you want to say, you know, that Astros season could be over very quickly. It certainly could be. And I'm not refuting that at all. I'm not saying like I believe in this Astros team based on what I've seen. The pitching woes are big time. Average, the Astros have a higher batting average than the New York Yankees. They have the sixth best average in baseball, but run scored doesn't translate to production. So they're, you know, all the way down in 16th and run scored 158. The Dodgers lead the all of baseball at 214. They're the juggernaut that we all expected. The difference for the Astros so far this year, seventh in OPS, again, fairly good offense across the board, and they could easily put up a great offensive series in the next one. They could easily put up a great offensive game today, but Bregman is not the player he once was. Right now, he's having a Glaber-esque walk year, and I guess that could turn on a dime, but it definitely does not doesn't look good right now. It doesn't look like somebody I'd want to pay. And there was a point when maybe I would have wanted to pay him, you know, Yankee fan growing up, Jeter fan. That time is not now. I'll tell you who looks a little less intimidating, Yordan Alvarez. For whatever reason, just a step slow on all those Rodon breaking balls yesterday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And little, you know, chance to do. When does this ever happen in the past? 9-4, Ian Hamilton struggling, first and second, two outs. Alvarez has a chance to do damage, hit some hard balls, foul, and then gets a Slombio center cut just below the zone, maybe bottom edge of the zone. I mean, he usually hits that ball 450 feet. It looked like he was waiting for it, and he popped it up.
Nobody's really looked good. I mean, Altuve falling for the Rodon slider has been nasty, but he was swinging out of his shoes on a couple of occasions. Volpe made that great play on Alvarez up the middle, stole a hit from him. That all plays into morale, you know, like you can't buy a hit. You can't find the holes. Like, it's definitely affecting them. But I mean, any other team that starts the season 12-24, you're looking at it and you're like, well, they're in trouble. We are talking about the White Sox, right? Being the worst team potentially in history.
Yeah.
That's been a conversation, right?
Yeah.
They have three fewer wins than the Astros. So that's the perspective I'll put it. Again, not writing the Astros off, but if the Yankees were 12-24 right now, what would the discourse be? I'm just asking. What would it be?
Yeah. I mean, again, it's not even writing off or not writing off for me. Or at least that's as far as I'll go. Like, are the Astros are closer to dead than alive right now?
Yes.
For sure.
That's what
absolutely. And did the Yankees, they're 6-0. They won 3 coin flip games in Houston. You want me to apologize for that? Like, am I supposed to get up and be like, I'm really sorry the Yankees executed better in the later innings and won some close games? That's my favorite thing that happens now online all the time, too. Shout out to you, Indiana Pacers, by the way, who couldn't beat 6 healthy New York Knicks. And they lost Jalen Brunson for a quarter and a half yesterday. And they lost OG Anunoby for a quarter and a half. And they can't even breathe. And you lose to them, you start committing techs late because your coach can't keep his emotions in check. And after the game, you send the refs, you send the NBA a video of 78 missed calls you think should have gone your way. 78 missed calls? Like, all these 50-50 calls that the Knicks got are missed calls now. Like, that's what everybody does on Twitter, because that's what everybody does in reality. It's always excuses. It's excuses for Rick Carlisle and the Pacers, who, again, it's right in front of you. You got a 12-point lead against a team that has no healthy bodies, and you blow it because you can't out-hustle them. And then you're like, I'm going to send the NBA a video of some guys banging bodies, and you tell me if this is an offensive foul or not. Okay. And he also plays the small market card or whatever. That's what fans do when they lose. Oh, well, we lost 3 times, but we almost beat you all 3. It was 1-run losses and 2-run losses. You didn't. You didn't win. And oh, we would have beaten you, but our manager's an idiot. He's part of your team, isn't he? Like, that's my favorite thing. It's always like, oh, you only won because our manager put the wrong lineup out there and made the wrong bullpen change. We'll see you next time. Yeah, you'll see me next time with that same dumb manager who doesn't know how to keep together his lineup and bullpen. Like, oh, we would have beat you, but our bullpen's terrible. Okay, again, that seems like a you problem. You have a bad bullpen. You got to fix that if you want to beat my team. I'm so sick of this. And you get that. You get it so much online now. And I guarantee that if the Yankees win today and go 7-0 against the Astros, or lose today and finish 6-1, Houston fans will do, yeah, I'll wait till we see you next time. Like, when we have a manager, you know, Joe Espada can't manage and the bullpen's not good and the lineup's struggling, Bregman's bad. It's like, yeah, those all sound like reasons why you lost the games. Not an excuse, just a reason why you lost the games.
Yep. Where are we most happiest here? Where should we start off? I don't know. I am particularly happiest about just Aaron Judge in general. You know, I don't think I need to boil this down to a moment, just because it's kind of been wire to wire good vibes to for me to pick a moment out of what we've had a pleasant, we've had a pleasant 17 innings out of these two games. Aaron Judge's OPS is now back up to 843. With a 139 OPS plus, attacking pitches. I don't know. It's just, I was legitimately concerned about him, whether it was injury based or whether it was just, actually, no, I'm not going to lie to myself. I never thought that there was this fast of a regression coming on, but I thought there was an injury. I thought there was something to be legitimately concerned about, yeah, with his timing, and all that. But it appears that these last, 3 games, if you include Sunday, and Saturday too, he had 2 hits. He's tossing it all. He's tossing all the critiques in the trash, and the fact that he's doing it against the Astros is just that much better.
Yeah. And look, maybe there was an injury. Maybe he got over it, but, and there were the absurd reports of, well, I think the regression monster just hit him year over year. He's just bad now. Or like he said it himself, his toe's going to need constant maintenance. So that means he's a 170 hitter with no power. I mean, I'll admit it lasted longer than I wanted it to.
Sure.
And so at a certain point you start being like, I want to explain this slump away rationally, but I'm having trouble because he's still terrible. So what do I do? But yesterday, Oppo, pestering that gap with doubles and that long homer, which could have been a grand slam if Gleyber and Volpe didn't doink each other on the base paths, or, you know, yeah, that briefly, I saw some comments that were annoying. I don't actually know. I'm going to pin it on Gleyber, but I'm going to pin it on Volpe too, because Gleyber had home plate taken if he ran full speed. But then let's say he's the least bit unsure of himself, which he clearly was. He can't get thrown out at home plate on an infield single to end that inning either. So I get why he's unsure of himself. Volpe's got to look up. He's got to know that Gleyber's not going full speed. He can't be going full bore. If he looks up when he's rounding second, he's got more than enough time to go back. Yeah. It's on both of them. It's not on Gleyber or on Volpe, or neither is absolved. Both, if you just run, you got a guy scoring and a guy on third, and that's 80% true. I guess John Singleton could have broken out of his haze and whipped the ball home. But yeah, I'm going to pin that on both of those guys, obviously. The moment I was happiest in this series was destroying Justin Verlander and Ben Verlander at the exact same time, tossing a temper tantrum. Justin, obviously, this is the Volpe home run was sort of the icing on the cake because he hit the ball hard twice in the same direction and couldn't get a hit. And at that point, his average is going under 250. And then he gets it way gone. That was nice to see. Use the porch. Justin Verlander got lit up. And then you got Ben Verlander, who when he tweets, when does he tweet about the Yankees? When he tweets about the Yankees, he usually says it's usually to talk about Babe Ruth committing arson and murdering his wife in a fire. He doesn't usually give the Yankees credit. So the most annoying Nepo sibling, although Gracie Cashman, Brian Cashman's like daughter, granddaughter, niece is doing Yes Network content now as well. Okay. I'm going to flag that one too, just to say, hey, that's little Ben Verlander-y to me, but maybe she's great. I don't know. Ben Verlander is a man mostly known for having a brother and being annoying. And he had to tweet the Verdugo home run and he had to tweet the Volpe home run. And he did it with a sheen of irony. He was like, the haters said I would never tweet my brother getting lit up. But here I go. Look at me. I'm a hero. It's like, I don't actually think the haters were talking to you, but I do appreciate you showing up right now. The Verdugo pimp job is going to be the enduring image of that game, that series. Probably the Volpe home run, I think, meant a little bit more to me, but the Verdugo, just the immediate punchback, which we saw again yesterday with the Soto homer. Are we going to make it 3 for 3 of Kyle Tucker homers today? It seems very possible, but nice to see Verdugo immediately take care of business. This is the best offensive and defensive outfield the Yankees have had in, like, it depends on your opinion of Brett Gardner.
2009?
A really long time. 2009, and even 2009 had Melky, which, like, offensively, kind of a weak link. This is a great outfield, and Jason Dominguez is getting ready to take rehab games at DH. So the moment I was happiest was take your pick in that first game, but just any of the moments where Justin and Ben Verlander both had a reckon with their own mortality. And I say Ben because his mortality is tied to his brother's because he's not an independent person. So whenever his brother gets lit up, like a little, he's got a horcrux in there, like a little piece of his heart burns out because he wouldn't have a career if he didn't have a brother who's on a world champion team. So I think that's what Kate Upton and Garrett Cole's wife were talking about in the stands as well. Just like, man, is Ben going to be okay? Like, if this is just how, if this is just how Justin is now, like, is Ben going to get through this? Like, where's he going to go? Like, all the media layoffs in the world and Ben Verlander still at Fox.
Yeah, that was good stuff. Funny. It's just funny how it all happens, how it all transpires. He would have been better off just not saying anything. That's the crazy part.
Who wants to read these tweets? He probably thought that, like, the Astros would come back and at the end of the game, he could be like, I was a people's champion in the first inning, but, you know, I never gave up on my team. It was a classic kind of guy too, who's like, I'm not an Astros fan. I just celebrate everything they do and hate the Yankees. Like, all right, well, it seems like, you know, you're a fan of one of these two teams.
Yeah. What else we got here? Moment we almost peed our pants.
Yeah. Do you have one? Because I definitely have one.
You definitely have one. Mine was, yeah, I mean, I do have one. It was the first inning on Tuesday when Kyle Tucker homered. I said, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Mm-hmm. Luis Heel got the first two outs quickly. If I'm not mistaken, Tucker had two strikes on him. Can't remember.
I believe so. I mean, that fastball was about – that was hit about as hard as I've ever seen a fastball hit until yesterday when Giancarlo Stanton – I don't know what that was. I still can't comprehend that.
One of the coolest home runs you'll ever see.
Of all time. And the fact that he still has that in him is like jaw on ground.
But, yeah, it was – you know, we talked on Monday. We were like, yeah, I'm not going to be surprised if we just let the Astros right back into it, let them waltz back into, you know – the division picture, get their momentum back, and that was the one thing. I mean, outside of a Altuve leadoff homer, the next thing was Kyle Tucker doing that with two outs when you're about to get out of the inning.
I guaranteed you that Altuve leadoff homer, and I can't believe it didn't happen. Like, I still can't believe it didn't happen. I guess he'll go yard tonight. Probably worth me saying that in hopes that maybe we keep the reverse jinx momentum going. Yeah. But he had an opportunity with guys on base against Rodon yesterday. Yeah. To get back in the game, 5-1 to 5-4, and like that. And guess what? No go. apparently.
No, I was proud. I took a deep breath after that because I knew there was a lot of game left, and I knew, again, was negative on Monday. Had to shake those vibes, get them out. You guys had to experience that. And I said, it's going to be fine. I'll get through it. And they absolutely blasted them in the bottom half of the inning. And then roll. I think they scored in every – they scored in the first, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. They didn't score in innings 2 through 8 in that first game. So couldn't have gotten a better better response after that scary moment.
Yes. I was nervous. It's so weird to be nervous about the Yankees and nervous about the Knicks and nervous about the Rangers proportionally. Like these playoff – there's no days off. The playoff teams play every day. It's one or the other. And like – being up 2-0 in each series is great, but that doesn't really mean all that much in the long run. Like every single night, there's another one of these. Maybe 2-0 gives you a brief reprieve, but then if it's 2-1, you're right back at it. Like, God. And so that Altuve at-bat's right in the middle of an intense part of the Knick game. And I'm like, I don't have the energy to see this go to 5-4 right now. And I would really appreciate that not happening. And it didn't. And they ultimately get to the finish line. And you don't get too many of those bad wrist notifications that are like, it's 8-4 now. It's 8-6 now. Enjoy. But the moment I almost peed my pants, the poor little kid, David, grabbed a live ball yesterday, took a run off the board, kept it at 5-1, stole a ribby from Austin Wells. And look, we're content creators. Content creator, kind of a dirty word because it implies just like person who talks into camera for 2 hours, which I guess is what we're doing right now. But it kind of implies valueless content. And I'll tell you, like a real piece of valueless content that I could have done was an angry screed about that child stealing a run from the New York Yankees. And if they'd lost by a run or gotten the game tied up late when they could have still been leading by a run because a double into the corner was picked up, a live ball was picked up by a young boy, that would have been some valueless content that a lot of people would have read, but I would have felt really bad for writing, and I would have had to explain to St. Peter one day, scrolling through his big long list of life accomplishments, like married, okay, gainfully employed. At one point, you wrote an article criticizing a child for catching a baseball. Do I have that right? And I would have to be like, yeah, I didn't like it either at the time. But
they made me do it.
They made, yeah, he made me. Who, the kid? What are you talking about? Go to hell. And so I'm thinking dark thoughts. It's the Astros. It's funny. There, Michael Kay is having fun in the booth. Everyone online is laughing at the clip. It's not a playoff game. It's just May. But if they go on to lose, if that game becomes 5-5, I'm thinking about that kid. If that game is 6-5 Astros late and we're trying to rally and tie, but it should be tied already and we should be trying to walk off, I'm thinking about that kid. And so I'm just really thankful and grateful for that kid that we don't. Now it's just funny. He gets to go home. He gets the ball. His dad probably still – his dad had resting what are you doing face. But it's
what if they
over.
Escorted him out? They were it's like, a great, get, yeah. get out.
I mean, do you think he stayed for the rest of the game? The dad definitely had on his mind, like, not my son.
It's like, you're going to get kicked out. What are
he
you
was doing? Sitting in front of him, too, which sort of did make me think this was just a guy who wanted to explain to a kid what a live ball is, and they had no prior relationship. I was thinking some sad things at that point. You never want that to be a turning point. And it didn't even come close. Never got nervous, you know, 9-4 in the ninth. I felt I was in a good place. I was just like, you know, usually I'd be thinking something weird about how, man, if the Astros just get like 6 more hits in a row, it could be like that Houston game, 7-2 game before the All-Star break, the Chad Green game. But in this one, I was kind of like, oh, there's traffic on the bases. I wish there wasn't. Oh, let's get some outs. Oh, we got some outs. That's nice. Game over. And shout out to David, who, you know, presumably has a baseball now, but can go home and just think about the time he went to a Yankee win and kind of made his mark, affected it a little bit.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Most surprising moment of the series for you?
Verlander getting rocked, hands down. Yeah. We sit here, and it's funny, Yankees community, whenever we play the Astros and whenever we want to kind of punk the Astros in some way, we clip the Aaron Hicks home run from the ALCS back in 2019, and that is like the defining moment of the Yankees kind of getting pumped up to play the Astros, right? And that is literally the only moment Justin Verlander has failed against the Yankees.
Yeah.
Like when, since he's been a member of the Astros.
Well, I mean, the stat, yesterday, Tuesday was the first time since joining the Astros in 2017. We know he's gone to the Mets since then.
Yeah.
Where he didn't go six plus innings against the Yankees.
That includes
the playoffs. And we face him, so often. Three times a year, we always face him in the postseason at least once. The Mets lined him up to face us last year a couple times. He was there for 6 days, and we faced him, I think, twice with the Mets. We always face him.
Yeah.
And six-plus innings every single time. Whether it's great or merely very good, he always manages to, let's say he gets touched up in the first inning, he'll still survive six. He got through six in the Hicks game. So to get him out after five, like, he couldn't even complete his mission of like, all right, I got my shit rocked, but I'm going to throw 112 pitches. Most of them are going to be high quality. I'll get through six. I'll give up four earned runs. To not even get him to that, you know, mental finish line was pretty satisfying.
Yeah. Eight hits, three walks. I just thought it was – not that I thought it was – that in its – that was the most surprising for me, but the funniest surprising element of it was – Verdugo did essentially all the damage. He hit the three-run homer, and then he singled again in the third inning to get the fourth run. That continued kind of – that didn't spoil a big opportunity when the Yankees got runners on in that inning. So it was just funny to see, like, you know, kind of, Alex Verdugo, I like him now. From how it's kind of – but, like, when I'm playing against him, he's a punk ass to me. Like, when he was on the Red Sox – total punk. And now it's funny watching like the guy who Astros fans and like opposing fans now definitely think is a punk ass, just absolutely shelling future Hall of Famer. I thought it was great.
Yeah. I mean, they're not wrong. His whole thing, whole thing is being a punk ass, but yeah, I mean, now he's ours. So that's pretty cool.
My punk ass.
My most surprising moment other than the Knicks game two last night, barely alive, beating the Pistons. Nobody wants to hear about the Knicks. Apparently the comments are like, I love the Pistons, which like, best of luck. Enjoy that. But it's Juan Soto beating out the infield single.
That was great. He hustled, dude. He fucking runs down the line no matter where the ball is. It's amazing.
Hustled like crazy. And it's not like I was like, you know, I don't think Juan Soto plays hard. I just didn't think he was physically capable of doing that. And to go from 3-1, that's another potential turning point in that game. And technically, so is Glaber and Volpe getting the pickle. That's also a potential turning point.
Yeah.
But bases loaded, two outs, 3-1 pitch, Arrighetti to Soto. Like, the guy he doesn't want to face in the entire lineup because of the way he hits with runners in scoring position and the way he tattooed him in the first inning. You have a chance to make a statement here. 3-1 pitch is a dirty changeup. All of a sudden, 3-2. Like, he can't find the plate, and then he does. How many times have we seen this?
No.
3-2 pitches dribbled into the ground, and you're saying, okay, so we're not going to get a run out of that, and now we're going to have to make a 3-1 lead stand up for a while. Nope. Juan Soto with the kind of speed I don't think many expected from him at all. So that mattered. That was real.
Certainly did.
Thing you might have missed, I'm just going to scrap this entirely because it was going to be the Verlander six-inning stat for me. But, for me, I just want to make sure that before we move on to some other stuff that we don't not talk about Carlos Rodon, who I'm giving him flowers for the outing, obviously, and for what feels like there's a breaking point on Rodon because he's so max effort that eventually, like, he does pitch to the score a little bit. It's 8-1, and all of a sudden it's double, triple, and you're like, all right, we got to get him out of here. It's not like the game's going to spiral. I wasn't worried. I thought it might be 8-3. Caleb Ferguson gets out of the inning. I still think they're going to win the game at that point. But I don't want Rodon's line to not be reflective of how good he was in this game. So as soon as the RBI tripled, it's like, all right, three runs is enough. Get him out. And then he was lucky enough to only get the second. But that fire-breathing inning where he got Altuve with the runners in the corners and then got Kyle Tucker swinging and got off the mound sort of almost doing like, I don't even know what that was, like standing at attention. I think it was a scream away from the camera, but it looked awesome. 97 dotting on the corner, even 93 looked sharp, got sat Alvarez to sleep early in the game. The slider was nasty. And look, maybe he is going to be more than a two-pitch pitcher someday. Maybe the cutter is a more regular part of his arsenal. Maybe the changeup he used it against the Marlins a few weeks ago to great effect. But if Rodon is going to be the guy we paid for, he's going to be A, emotional, and he was last night, and he was seemingly every start he makes outside of the one dud against Baltimore. He worked out of a bases loader, no outs in that game too, mm-hmm. though, so not so bad. He's going to be emotional, and B, he's going to be somebody with a really elite fastball and a really elite slider. So someday he might age into not being a two-pitch pitcher. But the goal was for him to be a really good two-pitch pitcher in the first couple of years of this contract. Yep. The back injury and the chronic nature of it, if you didn't believe that Rodon still existed, then I understand. Like, I'm definitely never going to sit here and say I had full confidence in Rodon entering the season, and you're a fool if you didn't, because I didn't. And there was reason not to. The chronic nature of the back injury, what it did to his location, what it did to his stuff last year. We saw it. And so to think he was going to shake all that off this year just without it impacting him at all was not reasonable. And he's had his bumps in the road, and he was very hittable in his first couple starts, and he worked out of jams. I get it. Entering last night, his four-seam fastball was the ninth most valuable pitch in baseball, according to run value. So for all the people, too, saying his first couple lucky starts, hey, I don't see much here. I don't, like, you know, bet against him. If you have a chance to bet against him. Now fastball run value is apparently down to five. Apparently it decreased yesterday. That makes a lot of sense, but it's in the 90th percentile. Breaking run value, still not there for some reason. Savant doesn't believe in his slider, but velo, walk percentage, K percentage all starting to stabilize a little bit. He's still outperforming his peripherals, but every day I watch him and I go, yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy we wanted. That's the guy we have. So is he going to be a Cy Young candidate? Doesn't have to be. Just has to be a rock solid number two, someone you can rely on after the ace shows up. And last year wasn't that at all. Wasn't even close. Now imagine you've just faced Gerrit Cole, and then you have to face this version of Carlos Rodon.
Yeah.
And then maybe Luis Gil, and maybe Clark Schmidt, maybe Marcus Stroman, maybe Nestor Cortez, maybe Cody Poteet.
Maybe.
there's a lot of guys back there. And so their pitching rotation, no team uses five guys all year. No team uses six guys all year. But suddenly there are a lot of bedrocks here, and Rodon's return has been a big part.
Certainly has been good press for Carlos. It's all I've been asking for. Got some on Wednesday night. I love it. For me, something you might have missed. You might have missed early count aggression in this one. Anthony Volpe homering on a 1-0 count felt significant. Judge homering on a 0-0 count felt significant. Judge with that two-run double into the gap 1-0 count felt significant. Soto, I think the home run was on a 1-0 count. Forgot.
Yesterday, I thought it was
hit off Arrighetti.
Yeah, let me check, because I actually thought it was first pitch ambush, but I could be wrong.
Either way, it's early in the count. We have been fucking begging. We watched that entire Oriole series, and
first pitch.
Who was it? It was first pitch. Great. So yeah. my thesis is alive. Who kicked our ass? Was it Dean Kramer?
Everybody, but
it was Dean Kramer. It was Dean Kramer in that F. It was the first game. I think it was Dean Kramer. Nonetheless, yeah. Dean Kramer, first pitch, every single batter was dropping in a meatball. The Yankees were not swinging. And then they let him work the count. He got into a pitcher's count as a result of throwing the first strike. And then he would have the wiggle room to mix around and mess with his pitches, and the Yankees paid for it. Now they're hopping on the first couple pitches when I don't know if it's the scouting, I don't know if it's the instinct from the hitters. This is the change we've been begging for. We have professional hitters, like professional hitters. These are very good hitters in this lineup, all-star caliber, almost, you know, either they have been an all-star before or they have the capability. If you are looking at this being Anthony Volpe's breakout season, that could be all-star caliber. Juan Soto, all-world baseball. Aaron Judge, all-world baseball. Giancarlo Stanton, former MVP. Anthony Rizzo, former just steady all-star caliber player. Gleyber Torres, formerly an all-star. Don't know what's happened, but, you know, here we are. Nonetheless, these guys should know better. These guys should know when they are, you know, picking their pitches to rip. They should know what the scouting report is on these guys and when they're dropping in these strikes. I don't know what the change was in the series, but we've seen immediate results. I need this more. This is what invigorates the offense. And I am fine. You might say on the flip side, like, oh, wouldn't you be mad if they're hitting choppers on the first pitch? I mean, I guess if that became a trend for 2 weeks and they weren't switching it up, but when do you see the Yankees swing at the first pitch in general? They're always trying to work counts. The Yankees ethos over the last 4 years has been walk or get into a full count, put the pitcher in a bad position. And like, I understand there's value to that, but you need to mix it up. And if you, they clearly saw an opportunity here to capitalize on that. They did it in this series. You got 19 runs. Let's keep it going.
Keep it going. I mean, and we're doing the boastful podcast before the third game of the series. Not because I think they're 100% unequivocally going to win this game, but just because
I don't care if they win this game.
I've seen all I need to see. So we'll figure it out. It'd be nice to get some, maybe late tie game, see some Josh Hader in this series. That could be fun. But also it could be fun to just beat their ass again. I would have fun with both of those options. If we're going to give Rodon love, I'm going to give some love to Luis Gil too. And just the reality, a lot of people, I know Talking Yanks talked about, hey, at a certain point, we're going to have to shut this guy down or limit his innings or whatever. And that's probably true, but he's coming off Tommy John, and he's coming off a full year and a half of Tommy John rehab. So he's already, at this point had, you know, he's had the worst, longest term ramification, like the elbow is already gone. So I'm not really worried about the elbow going again. I'm obviously worried about the overall health of the arm, and the shoulder is usually a primary concern because the elbow you bounce back from, it just takes a while. Shoulder, you don't know. So they're going to have to be conscious of that moving forward. But I do think it's less of an easy conversation. 18 hits allowed through seven starts is a Yankees record to start the season, by the way. But the downside is an MLB leading 24 walks, most in baseball. And so that means his future is bright. His presence right now is extremely bright, but a transition to the bullpen is not just going to be so easy. Like, okay, Cole's back. We got to bump him, and it helps us limit the innings anyway. He's not the first name I want to turn to, despite the utter electricity of his stuff in a tight game. We've talked about this plenty of times. Let's say you get to the postseason and Heel's not in your playoff rotation, but he is in your bullpen. First and second, two outs, 2-2 in the eighth. Am I going to guarantee he's not going to start with two walks? Am I going to guarantee he's going to have his control from the jump? He's about as exciting a starting pitcher as they've had since Luis Severino in 2017 and like the first really good Luis Severino year. But could be talking about nothing. These things tend to work themselves out. You usually don't actually have to make a bullpen decision eventually because a starter who was there isn't there anymore. Maybe the rehabs don't go the way that you're hoping, and we'll talk about that in a second. But I think it's a little bit more complicated than just, hey, he'll go to the bullpen. You know, Cole will get back, he'll go to the bullpen. And then, you know, natural innings limit. It's more complicated because of the walks, but it's also more complicated because he's the most dominant starter on the team. So, like, right now I want him starting game three in any playoff series. That includes Gerrit Cole, and I don't necessarily want him in the bullpen where I don't think his strengths play up.
Yeah.
Clearly his stuff plays up in the rotation.
I have a crazy theory about Luis Gil. Is it beneficial sometimes, maybe in his scenario, maybe just with somebody with the crazy velocity and crazy movement that he has? Is it advantageous to be a little erratic? Like, hitters, imagine how intimidating that is in the batter's box, like not knowing where a 99-mile-an-hour fastball is going, or where a snapping slider is going,
and the changeup, moves
like that will break you. The changeup will literally break you. The velocity disparity there is is that's where the value is. And look, I know walks are bad, right? He's got five. He almost has six per nine, which is crazy.
They're not good. Most in baseball is bad. Anywhere you slice it.
But guess what? 4.4 hits per nine, that leads baseball. So when you're looking at the dichotomy of those two stats, right? What you don't want is somebody who gives up a lot of contact. I mean, in theory, you don't want that. Some pitchers, it plays to their strengths, depending on how hard the contact is or if they're inducing a lot of ground balls. You guys know this. Either way, the Yankees defense, not the greatest. Luis Gil just getting traffic on the bases from walks and then taking care of business with strikeouts and not giving up a lot of contact and, you know, kind of throwing hitters off with his command and his velocity disparity. I don't know. It could be a crazy theory, but we've kind of seen it to this point succeed through seven starts. Seven starts is a fairly significant sample size for somebody who's going to be making probably what, 28. So that he's 25% through his season. If we're being fairly optimistic here, I don't know. I like the stuff, and you know, he might have to get bumped, but you're right. The bigger concern here, I'm fine with a starter issuing a lot of walks for a reliever to do it when you don't have that leash to redeem yourself the next inning or you're issuing these walks early in the game when the pressure isn't on. Coming in the seventh, eighth innings, very different story when you're tasked with holding on to a lead as opposed to tasked with, hey, I got to get through five or six innings. So I don't know how his stuff will play in the bullpen. If they figure out his command between now and mid-July and they like where they're at, I think that could be a great solution. But right in this moment, I think he's got to stay in the rotation.
Yeah, and he's got to pitch through these things too. Like that Blue Jays start where he could have gotten absolutely wrecked when he walked the whole universe.
Seven walks in five innings.
They let him pitch through it, and he got through five, and ultimately they did not win that baseball game because the bats were ice cold. But you got to the end of that line, and you were like, I could not have asked for anything more from him based on how that started, based on the damage he limited. That was important. So, again, lot of time left on the clock, but already – I mean, this start to watch that Kyle Tucker homer, like you said, and be so deflated and think, all right, here we go again. Like, we let the Astros wake up. We did it. That was the only hit he allowed. Hit, not just run. You fucking kidding me? That is that's an insane.
It is. Start. I like sometimes you got to have an erratic guy on the mound. In my opinion, he is the perfect amount of erratic for me. And I think it's enough to intimidate hitters because he throws so hard. Like, it's scary being in that battle. Look at Fernando Tatis Jr. Like, he's getting thrown up and in because he's on top of the plate and like the Padres are angry about it. Tatis is clearly shaken up a little bit about it because it's not fun to be in the batter's box getting buzzed by that, but by fastballs coming up and in at you. And I think hitters might be a little bit intimidated by what Gil has to offer. And then you combine that with the fact that he's a little bit wild here and there. Changes the perspective in the batter's box for sure.
A little bit, just a smidge wild. I mean, either way, like, shout out to the Twins. Thank you for Luis Gil. Hope you enjoyed Jake Cave, who's no longer on your team. That was a great trade. Appreciate you for sure checking in with us on that one. Before we go, a world of injury news. So I just want to give you the pile of injury rehab updates and say, hey, which of these do you actually believe? Which one do you believe in most? Which one of these do you even care about right now? I mean, the vibes are so high that I don't want to think about figuring out where some of these guys go because it just feels fruitless because I'm like, I'm not going to actually see you though, right? Like in a month, you're going to be ready in a month? I don't think so.
Nope.
Here's the flurry we've gotten. Dominguez DHing in 2 weeks, and I think that's huge, obviously. Seems like he's ahead of schedule. Tommy Kahnle going to get five outings with the Tampa Tarpons, they say. Nick Birdie struck out three guys in a rehab appearance the other day, including James Wood, who I think should be the top prospect in baseball. The third one was on a violation, like a batter timeout violation. He says he's ready. They say he's coming back tomorrow. See you, Michael Tonkin. But, I mean, that's one for you. DJ LeMahieu fielding grounders, but only hit right at him, so he's not moving laterally. I know my answer to that one. Oswald Peraza starting rehab, but that's going to be like a full month of minor league baseball and then maybe some bonus minor league baseball at the end of it. So which timeline are you actually letting yourself believe in at this point? I mean, Dominguez, I'm excited. I believe that he's going to be DHing in 2 weeks. I don't believe that when he's ready, he's going to come up to the bigs. I think he's going to play at AAA for a little while. I have allowed myself to believe that Nick Birdie is showing up tomorrow. He is walking through that door. But I don't think I believe in any of these other rehab timelines.
I believe in Dominguez. With the way that his rehab has progressed, it has actually been linear. It's been consistent with what we know about position players undergoing Tommy John surgery. Everybody else, Oswald Peraza, you want to hear my hot take? You're never going to see him in a Yankees uniform again.
I don't think so.
That's my take.
Why do I want that?
No, he's going to be playing in the minors. He's going to build his stock up a little bit with some encouraging play there, and then he's gone.
It's a race somewhere between him and LeMahieu who can get the Jamai Jones spot faster, but I don't really have a lot of faith in either of them.
No, I don't. And DJ LeMahieu, again, I don't have to reiterate this on the podcast for the 20th fucking time. He's not factored into my 2024 plans. In my mind, I'm not seeing DJ LeMahieu in a uniform this year. And I'm not saying that because he's not going to come back. I'm saying it because there is no way that I can fathomably project him into the plans based on everything that's happened over the past 4 years. Tommy Canley, same thing. I will believe it when I see it. Five outings, sure. I would love to see him get through five. I would love to see him get through three without there being an issue. Nick Birdie, I guess he is ready. I didn't think that was a concerning injury. It kind of seemed like it was a bit of a tweak because he's had a lot of inconsistent action over the course of his career because of the injury troubles. Didn't shock me that he suffered a hip issue after having been a very integral part of the bullpen at the onset of the season and going through a full spring training. So I could see him being back. Dominguez, second hot take. Think it's kind of a medium take. He comes back when he's eligible, right? He goes to AAA. He plays there for a week. He bats 330. He hits two home runs. He's on the roster. He's on the Yankees roster right after that. So it's Birdie, who's coming back probably in the today or tomorrow. Would you think it was tomorrow?
I believe he claims he's going to be ready tomorrow.
Birdie back this weekend. Birdie back this weekend. Jason Dominguez back in the beginning of July. The Yankees roster at the beginning of July. Tommy Canley, DJ LeMahieu, Oswald Peraza, TBD. Oswald Peraza, not a Yankee.
No. I agree. I do think Dominguez can earn his way back very quickly. I would just be cautious about just penciling him right in. It's also, it's not even pessimism. I know what Jason Dominguez can do.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of like, I can't believe how important he was to my mental health like 5 months ago, 6 months ago. Now that I know what's in store, if we have Juan Soto's here, Verdugo's more than holding his own. The lineup doesn't exactly need an infusion there. But at the same time, I think he's improved playing him every day versus playing Stanton every day. I think the team is better with Dominguez every day. So probably not going to be a regular Yankee this year, I guess. But I do think I think early July sounds right. Like, give him a couple warm-up weeks. I'd like to maybe see if he could be great if he could play second, get Gleyber out of there. But
imagine. Not gonna happen.
You're getting trolled in the comments about Keenan Middleton, by the way, who I don't believe is not active. Wasn't active on Monday. I feel like I would have heard if he'd come back from the IL. Still hanging out on that 15-day IL, meaning holding a zero ERA so far this year, though. So not bad.
Yeah, Middleton, sure. Yeah, my mistake from the other day. That's good.
Yeah,
that's
you're good. Getting rocked. It's finally you. The comments are on me for a...
Well, I get made fun of every day for being a Mets fan.
Oh, you're right. I mean, they call me Stephen A. Smith. Like, that's a bold one. Like, do you guys want to hear a Stephen A.? Is that why you're calling me that? Because I'm not going to do that. Just not going to do that. But I was thinking about I'm thinking about more impressions coming up. So ping me if you want impressions. I mean, the most surprising moment is we haven't done impressions in like 2 months. So let me know. The Yankees have another game tonight. Yankees play the Astros tonight. I'm trying not to put too much stock in it because the stock has already been put in the 6-0 start, in the 9-0 sprint. Jason Dominguez played a large role in that. Hey, how about Austin Wells with the two doubles yesterday?
Pretty cool.
Like what I'm seeing there, too. You can never have too much offense. Things always work themselves out. So everybody hitting, it'd be great. There'll be a time when nobody's hitting and you'll want somebody else to show up and change the vibes. I'll take everybody hitting for as long as I can get it. And right now, everybody's hitting except for Gleyber Torres, pretty much. So that's interesting. But the Yankees go to Tampa this weekend. Bank as many wins as you can because that place is a house of horrors. Thank your lucky stars. It's only three games. We'll see you on Monday right back here at 2 o'clock Eastern to talk through it, recap that set. The Rays probably going to wear their City Connects three times, which, depending on your age, are either sick or so bad. And I'm going to be honest, I love the colors. Black on black is tough. I like the design a lot. I like the logos they actually went with. I don't like the skateboarding Ray. And I think if you love the skateboarding Ray alternate logo, you're not 100% serious person. And I'm not 100% serious person either. I'm not 100% serious person either. But just like, there's a reason they're not wearing that in an organized baseball game. It's like when a minor league team rebrands and it's like a cow milking itself. And you're like, that's a funny logo, but they're going to wear that? It's like, that's how I feel about the skateboarding Ray.
I like the skateboarding Ray, but I don't need it on a professional. Yeah, it's a, it's like the AAA Rays.
Yeah, that's what I like him. It's nice, but
yeah. Yeah, Rays, fuck them. They suck.
They kind of don't suck anymore.
Like they beat the Mets. They beat up on the Mets.
They beat up on the White Sox.
No, they lost to the White Sox yesterday.
Yeah, but they beat them up the first two games. They're gonna deal with Johnny DeLuca now. Have you seen him?
Yeah, Johnny DeLuca's solid.
Pencil thin mustache, 25th round pick, former Los Angeles Dodger.
Yeah, and all those Dodger. He knew he was going to be fine.
10 RBI in his first 20 at-bats, 350 average, 1,100 OPS. Like, the Rays couldn't have been less interesting, and then they just struck gold with a former random Dodger. That's where we're at.
Not scared.
A little scared.
Fearless face in the Rays. They got bad pitching. If the Yankees can produce a semblance of offense that they've been in the over the first two games of this series, I think they'll be fine. Honestly, I think what they did against the Tigers, that will be enough against the Rays. This Rays offense is not going to get the best of our pitching staff based on what we've seen so far.
Stupid stadium is like, it's very fun to hit home runs there.
Yeah.
Like really fun. Yeah. Like as unfun as it is to lose games in Tampa, it's really fun to just hit moonshots and be up 7-1 in the late innings. So I miss Garrett Cole all the time. Usually he does pretty well down there, except for last year when he blew like a 6-0 lead in Tampa, the worst game of the year. But I'd love to win some games. That could continue tonight. We'll talk about it all. We'll talk about everything you missed on Monday's show. You can find us in the meantime on Twitter at Adam Weiner. For me, Thomas Carinante, where can the people find you?
Where can you guys find me? It's at Tommy's_takes. You can find the both of us at the official Yanks Go Yard Twitter account at Yanks Go Yard FS. YanksGoYard.com is the website. Content there. You guys are reading. Thank you so much. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. We appreciate it. We hope you guys have a good weekend. We hope you guys have a good early dinner tonight. Watch the Yanks. Get to bed early. Recharge for Friday. Big weekend coming up. I kind of like this 5 o'clock game. Aaron Boone explained it on the podcast, on the Talking Yanks podcast, which actually made sense. Now, instead of getting to Tampa at like 2 a.m, they get there around midnight when they take off from the flight. So like, okay, kind of a smart idea. Well, it's somewhat well-rested for tomorrow. Not too much banged up from that travel, but I mean, the off day after the home series was crucial. And I think that saved this team in a big way. So nonetheless, enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday. Let's go, Yanks.
Let's go. I mean, smash cut to like a 13-inning game tonight to neutralize that advantage anyway. But yeah, let's play a good game. 5 o'clock, get your dinner. Weird. I don't know. I'm hungry already. I got to plan out my dinner. Let's go. Let's win a baseball game. Let's win some more. Five's nice. Six is better. See everybody on Monday.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.